You're listening to Rambling Business, the only multimedia podcast with Rick and Brandon,
where we get into your business no matter where it is.
And today we'll be talking about changing your career from artless to artful. Rambling Business continues its Alameda Island series by attending Van Erp's gallery of the legendary coppersmith Dirk Van Erp, hence Van Erp's gallery.
You know, that's amazing.
Any relation to Wyatt Van Erp? I don't think Van was his middle name. Rick and Judy talked to Gus Bostrom of the California Historical Design Company and its preservation of Van Erp's workshop and tools. Of course, stay tuned to our tax sales and business takeaways coming up.
Dirk Van Erp was a San Francisco coppersmith who immigrated from Holland in 1890, which is where we're going to be going.
Very soon.
In about 3 or 4 weeks, right? To Amsterdam. Mm-hmm. He worked with the Navy hammering copper, and he did these shells for the Navy. I mean, he...
Artillery shells?
Yeah, I never think that they would hammer every single one of those artillery shells.
Well, really early on, I guess they'd have to.
Yeah, it's not like they had them in a stamp mill or something, right?
Yeah, maybe.
Huh. So he would take artillery shells and turn them into artwork, because he was the first independent coppersmith in the Bay Area that transformed utilitary items into decorative art. So, you know, I could see him. He's working there, and he's making these things. He's going, you know, I wonder what this would look like. I wonder if he, like, dropped one day, and it kind of got dented, and he went, you know, this kind of looks like a vase.
Yeah.
You know, and then he started thinking about it, and you know, you just don't know where people's ingenuity comes from.
Well, accidents have created most of the innovations in humanity,
right. So he started taking these copper artillery shells and making them to functional things like vases and lamps. And if you want to see what these look like, you can go to the ramblingbusiness.com website and go to this episode, which is 84, or you can go to Facebook, Rambling Business, and look at our podcast Facebook page where we have all the pictures also.
Yeah, it's really cool looking stuff.
Now, this happened to fit what he was doing in the arts and crafts movement, which was in full swing from 1900 to 1920. And, you know, here he was in an assembly line kind of thing, industrialization, and he had this artist just ready to burst out. And that's what the whole movement was about, was these people working in these menial tasks, an assembly line doing the same mm-hmm. thing, the same movements over and over again, yet they had so much that wasn't being tapped into.
Yeah.
And the arts and crafts movement exploded, and the individual creativity and craftsmanship came out. Now, Dirk became very successful. He opened up his own shop in Oakland, California. For those of you who don't know California, that's right across the bay from San Francisco. He opened it up in 1908, and then after a while, he moved it to San Francisco, which I imagine will be the high rent district.
Yeah, yeah. definitely from Oakland back then, it was a little expensive step up.
Now, he had a great reputation as being one of the most prominent coppersmiths in America. I can't imagine that, being one of the most prominent anything in the country.
Yeah. I'm the most prominent user of cheese in the Pasadena area.
And tracking down Jerusalem beetles to feed to your chickens.
Yeah, that's true.
I think you have...
I'm top of my class in digging up Jerusalem beetles and giving them to my chickens.
That's right.
It's not a lot of competition, though, for that one, I'd say.
Oh, okay.
Probably a lot of coppersmiths
that
he had to compete
with. That's
true,
yeah, that's true. Well, you never know. You never know. Yes. Anyway, Dirk passed away in 1933, and his son William continued the business until 1977. Now, after that, you know, things kind of disappear, you know, you would think. Because so many things that we have seen and we've talked about have just vanished. Like a few weeks ago, we talked about that tower. Nobody even knows where it came from in Silicon Valley, right? We did the headstone of Silicon Valley.
Yeah, it's very hard to keep a family business going for more than a couple generations.
Yeah. This was a very interesting business because William took it on and he was able to carry it forward, and he bridged the arts and crafts era with the modern era. So he kind of blended into the era as things changed. Now, a client of the California Historical Design, Forrest Merrill, bought the building and the tools in 1977 when William stopped doing this because he wanted to see it preserved because, you know, there's so many things in history that are just disappearing, getting thrown into land dumps.
Especially in some place like San Francisco.
Yeah, and, or, you know, California, the United States in general.
Everything. There's not a lot of new stuff in big cities or old stuff that stays around for a while.
So, you know, he's one of these guys that, you know, Forrest Merrill that just said, you know, I really like this. This is something that has to be preserved, but I'm not sure what's the end game in this thing. However, in 2014, which is quite a long time after that, the California Historical Design acquired all the tools and set it up as a 501c3 tax-exempt company in order to promote this kind of historical craftsmanship. And the mission...
Sort of like a museum.
Yeah, yeah, it's like a museum. And their mission is the Dirk Van Erp Foundation seeks to preserve the legacy of Dirk Van Erp by educating the public about his contribution to the art of quality handcrafted metalwork and to inspire others to continue his craft and or this craft through education. And so when we were there, that was the first day they opened up the workshop gallery.
Oh, wow.
We were there the first day. So they had about three craftsmen in there pounding away in his traditional workshop, the real thing.
That's great.
And we were standing around the window watching them, and these guys were like typical craftsmen, you know. They're pounding away. They didn't have a little stubby cigar sitting out of their mouth like Dirk Van Erp would, you know. But they were just pounding away, and they're talking to everybody as they're pounding away. Oh, yeah, this over here is this, and this over here is that, and you know, this is the way you do these things. Boom, boom, boom. Oh, yeah, and over here we got this over here. Boom, boom, boom. So it was really cool to watch that. So they opened up the gallery the day we visited, and you know, it was promoting this legacy. Now Alameda is actually in the Bay Area and has been part of that whole crafts movement, and that's, you know, our series is Alameda. And if you don't know anything about Alameda, it's a portion by Oakland, and it has an island, and we were actually on the island, so it was pretty cool. Now, if you wondered, well, he came from Holland, right?
Yeah.
And we're going to Holland.
Yeah.
And I said, well, do they know who he is? They said, oh, sure. In fact, the location where his father is made milk containers in his father's original shop, founded in 1858, is still in business.
Wow.
And they are showing Dirk's work this year that we're going.
Oh, great. So we're going to get a, you know, full circle show.
Yeah, if we leave Amsterdam. It's not in Amsterdam.
Darn.
So I don't know if we'll be able to do that.
And plus, we'll be really new on our clogs, so we probably won't want to walk that far. So we're all going to wear traditional clogs. If you want to learn more about the Dirk Van Erp Foundation, go to www.dirkvanerpfoundation.org. You're listening to Rambling Business. We'd like to thank our sponsor, Rick E. Norris and Accountancy Corporation. If you'd like to get the full experience, check out our website for videos, music, pictures, takeaways, and travel tips. www.ramblingbusiness.com. Now it's time for our tax tales, where we tell you about strange and unusual taxes from the past and the present.
Tax tales, tax tales, tax tales, tax tales, tax tales.
Tax tales, a woo.
And since Dirk Van Erp made containers, so did his dad.
Yeah, right.
The milk specifically.
Right.
We wanted to talk about another weird container tax for drinking vessels. In Colorado, you might want to think hard about whether you're going to drive down a road, whether it's going to be bumpy or if it's not going to be bumpy if you're going to buy a drink.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because retailers there aren't taxed on the purchase of cups. So if you have a cup without a lid, you aren't taxed. But you're taxed when you buy lids and straws.
Who in the world writes these things?
I don't know. Doesn't make any sense. Other items such as toothpicks, portion dividers, cup sleeves, and bibs.
Oh, are bibs.
Tax, yeah, bibs, a big thing that everyone uses in the big seafood capital of Colorado, right? You only really see them at crab places.
That's right.
Crab and lobster. But yeah, so basically any convenience item that's going to keep you clean, keep you from spilling on yourself or from dropping cups is taxed. But if you want to risk it and just have a lidless cup,
Or burn stains on your lap.
Yeah, oh yeah, if it's coffee. Highly recommend a lid if it's coffee. Now it's time for our travel tip, where we tell you what fun things you can do in the Alameda area.
When in Alameda, stop by Lake Merritt in Oakland. Now, have you been to Oakland much?
I've spent some time in Oakland. I have some friends who live there.
Now, in the middle of town, there's this lake. And you just think, oh, it's a nice lake from a city. You know, you've seen those. You've seen them in New York, mm-hmm. you know, the Central Park.
A nice little lake and a pond to congregate around.
But what makes this so unique is that it's a saltwater lake in the middle of a city.
Oh.
Yeah.
That makes sense because it's right next to the ocean.
Yeah, well, it's technically a tidal lagoon. And it was the first official wildlife refuge designated in 1870.
Wow, that's really early.
And it was, I read a little bit of the history on it. Actually, the Native Americans had, ownership of it, if you want to call it ownership. And, of course, they were run out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Typical. But the lagoon, I guess, kind of closed in a little bit. And so you got this lake, this, saltwater lake.
Well, yeah, the whole bay got very changed a lot in shape and size because of all the gold mining stuff.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
Yeah, they basically knocked down a whole bunch of mountains, putting it through industrial gold mining stuff, and all that
flowed down the American River and the Sacramento River.
And so basically the delta changed. It used to be a much bigger bay. Yeah.
Wow. Well, in this one, not only is it salt water, which is unique, and it's been around for a long time, has a great history, but you could canoe and row around, and look at the many birds that are there, because if it's salt water, you're going to have saltwater birds like pelicans.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, pelicans, egrets, and stuff on the shore. Now it's time for our takeaways, where we tell you what steps you can take to implement what we've been talking about on the podcast. The first thing to think about is, if you're working in a field that's stifling your creativity, try to think of the ways you can leverage those skills into an artistic direction, and preferably, list them out. Not just think about them, because then, if you're just thinking about things, it sort of lives in your brain and it stays there.
But I bet you there's a lot of people that are listening that have that ability.
Yeah.
And just kind of like just kick it around and don't really think about doing much with it. Number two, started off as a hobby. Now, we saw this with those toy soldier thing. Mm-hmm. Remember, they started off as a hobby, but they weren't making them. They were selling
them. A lot of small business owners who get into something they love have to start it as a hobby because, they need to sort of run way out from their regular job.
Yeah. So start off as a hobby and see if there's a market for the direction that you want to take.
The third thing to think about is if you find out there is a market, like Dirk did, basically you have to make a strategic plan and figure out what direction you're going to go and a business plan of how to get there, because you don't want to jump in with both feet and then realize, oh, I'm making all this cool stuff that there's a market for, but I don't know how to sell it or who to sell it to.
And then you have to deal with your spouse. Who's still working his or her 9-to-5 job 6 days a week while they're playing with your hobby.
Yeah.
And fourth, find professionals to assist you in getting your dream off the ground. There are so many things that you have to deal with regarding government regulations, business licenses, bank accounts, IRS, franchise tax board. The list goes on and on.
Safety, especially if you're doing
industrial stuff. Yeah, really big. And restaurant stuff, too. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So get the professionals, hunt them down, get referrals from people that use them, and have them help you. Because we do that all the time. Mm-hmm. We have people that come in and they say, I don't even know where to start. And I say, you know what? We can handle it in one day.
Yeah. And it's better than doing business for a couple years. Mm-hmm. Trying to do it yourself, doing it wrong, and then getting nailed by the IRS or OSHA or whoever.
Yeah, all right.
Now it's time to answer a question from one of our listeners. We have an email from Tim that says, I hear the Tax Act that passed in December 2017 has a new small business deduction, which is going to be taking effect this year. What is the business deduction, and can you explain it?
Well, first thing, Tim, is, as we always say, talk to your tax advisor because every situation is unique.
And every state.
We just kind of point you in the right direction. Don't come knocking at a door and saying, you said.
Yeah, yeah.
The section that you're talking about is probably 199A, and that is a really cool deduction for small business that passed with this Tax Act. If you're a sole proprietorship, LLC, or a small business, single owner LLC, a partnership, trust or estate, or S corporation, you can do it. If you're a C corporation, you cannot take it. So that's another thing to think about if you're thinking about making an S corporation election. It's not an above-the-line deduction, but it can be taken by even those who don't itemize. So the way it looks, and as of this point, and we're recording this in May 2018, there are no forms out, so we can't see exactly where it is. But it's somewhere after taxable income on the your tax on your on page two, we think. Now, there are limitations, so be careful. It is a deduction of 20%. Of qualified business income, but you gotta be careful of the limitations. You know, if you make too much money, you can't take it at all.
Okay.
If you make a lot of money, but not too much, you could take a little bit. And if you don't make a lot of money, you could take it all.
Yeah.
So depending on your taxable income.
So it's always tiered.
Yeah, it's tiered. And that's because it wants to help the small business thing. So that was one good thing that the Tax Act did. And hopefully you'll be able to jump on it.
That's all we have for this week. We'd invite you to check out some of our past podcasts where Rambling Business has traveled from Maui to Martha's Vineyard, New Orleans to Vancouver, Canada. Our map on ramblingbusiness.com shows our travels, and some of the map marks point to the page of podcasts for that city.
Yeah, I'd like to put them all down for all of them, but I only have so much time, so I kind of squeak them out a little bit at a time. But you can at least see where we went.
Yeah. All right, but till then, I'm Brandon.
This is Rick, and thank you for letting us get into your business no matter where it is.
Our music and podcast was produced by my son, Devin S. Norris. For all your music composition and podcast needs, check out devinsnorris.com.